Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Vicki Winterton, founder of Expert Insights Family of Opportunity, home of Expert Insights Magazine and Publish Magazine and Broadcast and Books, where visionaries and those on the rise come together to create immediate impact. And today I am so excited because I have with me Will Bowen. Will speaks from experience. He is an award-winning salesperson that now works with organizations around the world to create complaint-free work environments that are calmer, happier, and more productive. Will has been featured on Oprah, NBC's Today Show, the ABC Evening News, CBS Sunday Morning, and Fox News. Stories about him and his complaint-free concept have appeared in the Wall Street Journal, Newsweek, Published Magazine, and the Los Angeles Times, as well as hundreds of other newspapers and magazines across the United States and abroad. Will has delivered keynotes and breakouts to audiences as large as 4,500 from dozens of leading organizations, including the Million Dollar Roundtable's Top of the Table, Volvo Motor Company, and PricewaterhouseCoopers. Will is also the author of two international best-selling books, A Complaint-Free World, How to Stop Complaining and Start Enjoying the Life You Always Wanted, and Complaint-Free Relationships, How to Positively Transform Your Personal, Work, and Love Relationships, both published by Crown. Will, I'm so excited to have you with us today. I think the concept is so extraordinary, and I just could not wait to meet you and hear more about this wonderful, wonderful movement you have going.
Thank you, Vicki. It's an honor to be with you.
Tell us how you came about this really powerful movement of a complaint-free world, really, because that's what it is.
Well, actually, I was teaching a series on a book called The Four Spiritual Laws of Prosperity by a woman named Edwene Gaines, and she actually made the recommendation that people try and eradicate complaining from their lives. There is so much in personal development about attaining what you want. The challenge is it's like trying to swim across a pool, and what you want is on the other side of the pool, but you're trying to carry all this baggage and all this weight of the negativity of what you don't want. And so much of our focus is on what we don't want. So what she suggested was that people try and go 21 consecutive days without complaining. Scientists have postulated for years that it takes 21 days to form a new habit. If you can do the same thing over and over again for 21 days, it becomes habitual. And so I was looking for a way to monitor my own success and people's success, and I had seen these Livestrong bracelets or wristbands, and I got to thinking, well, something like that would work, but not just as a way of saying to people, well, I support a complaint-free world, but rather as a tool. The idea is you put the bracelet on either wrist, and every time you complain, you switch it to the other wrist. And you go through various stages along the way to become complaint-free, but the main thing you do is you realize how often you complain. The more you realize how difficult it is or how much you complain, the less you become a complaining person. And as you mentioned in the introduction, it has just exploded around the world. We have we just topped 10 million bracelets now to 106 countries around the world.
That is incredible. Again, it's truly a global movement that you've created. So you've created it in, you know, with a number of different environments in mind. So let's start with the results maybe that you've seen in the workplace. As a result of this movement, what have you seen in workplaces that have really adopted this complaint-free approach?
Yeah. It has been absolutely amazing. Aflac Insurance was they had two statewide offices in Michigan, and as we know, in the last few years, the economy in the United States has really turned south, but in Michigan has been particularly hit. And when they decided to combine the two offices into one office, they knew that it was going to be a struggle. They knew there would be a lot of complaining, and they also knew that they were facing an uphill challenge because of the economy. And what they did was they got a complaint-free bracelet. Each of the managers got a copy of my book, which explains you know, why people complain, why complaining is damaging, and more importantly, how to overcome it. They, the managers there, just the leaders, decided to adopt a complaint-free policy that when they got together, they wouldn't talk about what was wrong. They would focus beyond the problem on the solutions. They would say what it, they wanted it to look like. And that year, they had the biggest year in the history of the state for Aflac insurance. I know of a from Aflac Insurance to a small hair salon down in Houston, Texas. This owner of a hair salon was saying that there was so much complaining and negativity going on that people would go into the break room and they would complain about the very customers whose hair they had just cut. And so he painted the word, he painted the break room purple, painted a complaint-free world on the wall, and he then required every one of his employees to read the book to understand what the concept was, to get one of the complaint-free bracelets, and everyone there had to attempt to go 21 days. And if they made it, he paid them a week's salary. Now, again, this is a small hair salon in Houston, Texas. Three of his employees, his top producers, said, well, it looks to me like you're wanting to just have us wear rose-colored glasses, and they said they were going to quit. So he held open the door, and they walked out. He said that when they did, he saw about $200,000 a year in revenue walk out the door because they were his biggest producers. But he stuck with his guns, and now his little hair salon is not that little. He does over $1 million a year in this one location, and he credits it completely with shifting the attitude of the people there. One more quick example, General Electric took this on with one of their departments, and the people there at GE taught it to their employees, approximately 200 employees, and at the end of the experience, nearly 90% of them said that the environment was better to work in, and of course, if an environment is better to work in, you have less turnover, you have less absenteeism. They said that it was there was greater problem solving in the organization. So we have just heard time and time and time again from organizations that this simple idea has really transformed and increased profitability and has increased creativity and also helps people within an organization bond better together, be more productive.
It's just amazing, Will, because those are the things that companies are so concerned about, you know, the profit, the bottom line, the retention of both employees and of customers or clients, and then the ability for the creativity to flow and the business to really become all that it's to be. To have this movement be able to create all of that is quite incredible. I'm wondering, share with us what that does in relationships, because I can imagine, like, within families and interpersonal relationships, this has got to be incredibly powerful.
It is. It has been very, very helpful. It's been pretty amazing within families. We've had people say that their marriages were saved. I actually had a woman fly in, because I'm in Kansas City, Missouri, but a woman flew in from California. She had filed for divorce. She and her husband had been together for 15 years, 17 years, one or the other. And after all of that time, they had just, we've heard the term grown apart, but really they just kind of got on each other's nerves. Everything that they said to one another was condescending and difficult and challenging. And she heard about this from a friend of a friend and decided to do it, and she simply refused to complain to him or to complain about him. She would no longer speak negatively about him. And what happened, she discovered, was that she shifted internally, that all of the things that she had fallen in love with this man, were still there. They were just shrouded in years and years and years of difficulty that they had gone through. And she flew to Kansas City just to thank me. It was one of the most beautiful things, with tears in her eyes. She came to see me just to say thank you. And my understanding is they're still together. One of my favorite stories, there's a police officer in Albuquerque, New Mexico. He emailed me, and then he called me to say thank you that he and his wife were kissing more than they had ever kissed in a very, very long time. And when he called me, I asked him what he was talking about. He said, you know, when I got home from the end of the day, I thought what I needed to do was process, was dump everything that I had gone through that day. And he said, when I got home, I was no longer doing that because he was doing the 21-day challenge. That he was talking about what went well and was asking his wife about what went well for her that day. And he said that what they discovered was their little peck on the lips became a lot more passionate times of greeting one another. And they, too, had been together for more than a decade. So that's also one of my favorite stories. I've also heard of children getting along better. We've had thousands of schools, literally thousands of schools all over the world, take this on, and we even have a school curriculum that's free at our website, which is acomplaintfreeworld.org, and teachers have told us about how the kids are getting along better, how the kids love it, because to them it's a game. You know, kids are like, I'm not going to complain. I'm going to find a way to do this, and they become very competitive, which makes it work that much better. It becomes habitual without them even realizing that that's the desired end.
Oh, that is so incredible. And, you know, really the children are our future leaders, and for them to grow up in an environment that encourages this just can only just totally propel their creativity and their ability to do even more amazing things in the world, in the way of contribution. It's really quite something. It is.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
You know, I was wondering, how do you, you know, if you look at this strategically and you look at this from the standpoint of the scope, it's really, you know, it has just traveled worldwide. How do you hope overall that this will inspire others?
Our goal is 60 million people around the world, because it's believed that everybody interacts or has a extended influence on approximately 100 people. So in other words, you may have an active influence on 15 to 20 people, but exponentially they have influence on an equal number of people, and over time more and more people are influenced by who you are. So we feel that if we can get 1% of the world's population, that's 60 million people, and we're at 10, to take this on, that we can literally begin to shift the overall attitude of the world from inherently negative to inherently positive. My dreams aren't too big, do you think?
Well, I think you know, with such a wonderful premise that can truly change the nature of the world that we experience, it's got to be a huge vision, and it already is. But I can see it just getting larger and larger and larger. It's really quite incredible. How did you get, you know, I've been reading about all the things that you've been doing, and you have support from some of the top people in the world, you know, that are so well respected. The media, you've done it all. How did you get this powerful message out to the world and manage to garner so much support?
Well, you know, when we very first started doing this, I just sent off a press release to the local newspaper, to the Kansas City Star, and the editor that they suggested I send the press release to, I didn't hear back from for a month, and I thought, well, you know, they're just not really interested. And then finally I did hear back from them, but I'm glad that it took a while, because at that point, myself, I think I had strung together a maximum of maybe 6 days without complaining. I really think that what propelled this out was a couple of things. Number one, I myself stayed with it until I had gone 21 consecutive days. I have had a number of companies bring me in who want this to be something for their employees to do, and in that case, they just want their employees to stop complaining so that the managers' lives are better. And what I find that if the managers will stop complaining, the employees will stop complaining. You know, morale runs downhill. You don't raise morale, it filters down from the top. So I think the fact that I was willing to stay with this, and it took me 4 months to go 21 consecutive days. I think the other thing is that, we struck a chord with the world. I think that there's two things. Number one, there's too much complaining in the world, but number two, the world is not the way we would like it to be. And I think at some deep level, we understand that there's a correlation between the two, that we are so busy talking about what's wrong, focusing on what is wrong, complaining about what is wrong, that we're attracting and perpetuating what is wrong. And so when the story was finally run in the Kansas City Star, it was picked up by 30 or 40 newspapers, and then they did another story a few months later, which was picked up by about another 100 papers, which was then seen by the Los Angeles Times. They flew someone in to do an interview with me, which was seen by George Lewis of NBC. So we were on the Today Show for the first time then. And then People Magazine and ultimately, which of course there is no more ultimate than this, the Oprah Winfrey Show. So, and of course Newsweek, the Wall Street Journal, ABC Evening News, CBS Sunday Morning have all done stories about it. It's just one of those things that seems to really resonate with people. The other thing was, and can I share with you a story about how we ended up working with Dr. Maya Angelou?
Absolutely. That's one of my, I was going to ask specifically about her. Yes.
Well, this to me is proof of what I feel so very strongly about, and that is the power of intention. From the very early stages, we used a quote from hers as sort of our logo or our positioning statement, which Dr. Angelou said years ago, if you don't like something, change it. If you can't change it, change your attitude, don't complain. Mm-hmm. And so we loved that. We put that on our website and everything. Of course, we gave her attribution. And then when we reached 6 million bracelets, which was one-tenth of our goal, I was talking with some other people, and we said, well, who do we want to give the 6 millionth bracelet ceremoniously to? And it was unanimous, Dr. Angelou. And so I said, that's who we would give it to. And I began to tell people that we were going to give the 6 millionth bracelet to Dr. Maya Angelou. And they would say, oh, that's wonderful. Congratulations. How do you know her? And I said, I don't. I have absolutely no idea how to get in touch with her. She's Oprah Winfrey's mentor. She's in her 80s now. She's a bit reclusive, although she stays very active. She values her private time. I had no way of knowing. But I just continued not to say we hope to, we want to. I just kept saying we are going to give the 6 millionth bracelet to Dr. Angelou. And I mentioned it to a friend of mine that I had not seen in months. She and I ran into each other at a conference. And she said, well, tell her I said hello. And I said, do you know her? And she said, oh, yes, I used to book her as a speaker. And long story short, she ended up contacting Dr. Angelou, gave me the contact information. I talked with her. And Dr. Angelou invited us to her home in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And at our website, acomplaintfreeworld.org, is a short video of her talking about how powerful she feels this concept is. And then she began to hand out our complaint-free bracelets when she would go out and speak. So, again, it was just a setting of an intention that this is absolutely something that's going to happen, faith and patience. And it worked out.
Oh, and it worked out so beautiful. And it is such a beautiful and powerful concept that, again, it's attracted all of these really beautiful, powerful icons of our time to the project. It's really incredible. I wanted to ask you a little bit about your books. What have your books contributed to the movement?
Well, I think what the books contributed to the movement, and that's a very good question and a good way of putting it, is that there are so many questions. When you say a complaint-free world and you stop complaining, the books actually rose out of emails people were asking me. They were asking, what is a complaint? Why do people complain? How do I know if I'm complaining? Does it have to be a spoken complaint, et cetera? And also it was an opportunity for me to not only answer those questions, but to share some of the truly touching and amazing stories that people have sent to me. It's just some incredible stories. There is an expanded and revised edition of my first book that will be coming out in February of 2013. And it has a lot of updated stories, a lot of new information. It's about 70% new because the movement is continuing and people are sharing their ideas. One of the things that I really like to go into is the reasons why people complain. People complain for one of five reasons, and actually Dr. Robin Kowalski at Clemson University discovered this, and I came up with an acronym to remember them. The acronym is GRIPE, G-R-I-P-E. So people really only complain for one of five reasons, but sometimes a complaint can be for multiple of these reasons. But the G in GRIPE stands for get attention. We so long to be noticed and given attention by other people that sometimes, like when we're standing in an elevator, someone will complain just as a way of breaking the ice and getting attention. You and I spoke off the air about Dr. Joe Vitale. Joe and I are friends. Joe is actually on the board of A Complaint-Free World. And when he and I were talking about this, he made a resolution that he would not complain to get attention, but he would compliment to get attention. He compliments people as a way of breaking ice. So people complain to get attention. The R in GRIPE stands for remove responsibility. People complain about situations as a way of saying, what do you want from me? The cards were stacked against me. There was nothing I could do. She promised me that she would have the report to me by 2 o'clock. Here it is 4 o'clock. I can't get my work done, etc. So they complain to remove themselves from responsibility. The I in GRIPE stands for inspire envy, which is another way of saying bragging. People complain about their situations as a way of saying that they are so important because they have such difficult challenges. And it's another way of saying that they are so important that life is a challenge for them. It's a way of making other people look up to them. People actually complain to inspire other people to envy them. Somebody will say, oh, you know, poor me, I've got this book I'm getting paid $10 million to write, and I've got a quick timeline to get it done. Well, actually what they're doing is they're trying to find a way to explain to you that they got a $10 million book deal. The P in GRIPE stands for power. People complain to have power in situations, and you see this in families and in corporations all the time. Someone will complain to you about someone else in the family or the organization as a way of saying, if anything goes down, I want you on my side. I am building a case now so that you will be on my side. And the E in GRIPE stands for excuse poor performance. When someone does poorly at something, they will complain about the circumstances or the situation. For example, a singer will get up and sing and maybe miss some of the notes they would like to sing, and then they'll complain that the room was smoky or it was too hot or it was too dry or the microphone was bad. So that's my acronym, GRIPE, G-R-I-P, get attention, remove responsibility, inspire envy, have power, and excuse poor performance. So those are the kinds of things that I like to share with people in my book so that they can then be looking for themselves and others when they hear complaints and go, oh, I see, she's just trying to get attention, or I see, he's trying to brag or inspire envy.
Yeah, and I would think that that's really important for yourself as you're going through these 21 days, too, to see if there is some sort of a trend that you may not be all over the map, but you may be using just one or two of those arenas as the you know, to foster your complaints.
And, that is right, yes.
And then knowing that for yourself, because, you know, I really don't want to own any of those things you discuss, but I know I do, you know.
Yes.
So,
we all do.
Yeah. So it's that's so beautiful. I'm so glad you brought that up, Will, because it allows us to not only have a better understanding of ourselves and why we're doing what we're doing that's not so productive, but then also maybe having a little bit more understanding with others who are going through that for those different reasons, because we understand it better. So that's really important. Really important. So, I mean, your book is just, you both books are just chock filled with all kinds of great information. That's just the tip of the iceberg type of information you shared with us there. Can you tell me a little bit about what you learned from writing your books from a writer's perspective?
From a writer's perspective. Well, first of all, when I sat down to write the first book, I had just appeared on the Oprah Winfrey Show. I was fortunate enough to land a publishing deal with a major publisher, Doubleday, which is a imprint of Random House. And I was thrilled, and then all of a sudden I was like, okay, now I have to write a book. And I actually went through my, you know, we all have this ego mind that tells us, oh, you can't do it, you're no good, et cetera. And I think that that is truly the blessing of having an opportunity to write, is you get down and you get to slay that dragon every single day, a little bit of it at a time. That there are days when I have written and I have read back the following day what I wrote and just hit the delete key, because it just simply was not in the direction I wanted to go or in the voice I wanted to use or a number of reasons. Stephen King, in his wonderful book on writing, says that you have to be willing to kill off your darlings. And I love that, and I try to remember that. But sometimes I will write a story, and I'll put everything I've got into the story, and then I'm like, oh, it's such a great story. Where can I make it fit? And as soon as I ask myself, make it fit, I'm doomed. Because then you're just trying to stick it in because it's a great story and it doesn't necessarily support the core concept. I save them, and then ultimately I'll use them in subsequent books. But as I began to write the second book, and I actually just signed an agreement to write a third book now, which is on a completely different but related topic. As I started writing the second book, I thought, well, I've already written this first book. It's an international bestseller. It was the biggest selling book in all of China for a year. My ego's going to be quiet. No, it came back even stronger. You know, you're a one-trick pony. You can't do this again, et cetera. And so what I did was I keep a file called An Author's Ego Mind, and I allow it to vent. I write out what it says, and then I say, basically, thank you for sharing. Okay, now here are the facts. One, I got to get to work because I've got a book I've got to write, and you can continue to say what you want to say, but I've already written one successful book, and so I'm going to just trust and do the best I can. So the process of writing is such a scary process, but it's so thrilling because there are times when I will sit down and I will write something, and I'll read it back, and I'll say, that was fantastic. I wish I'd have said that, because it wasn't me. It came from somewhere, but it just more came through me.
Mm. Wow, that is so, so powerful. And what I love what you're saying about the fact that you really listen to that voice, and you let it be heard, and even, you know, give it some space to voice itself, and then move on beyond it, rather than fighting with it or ignoring it. Is that a really important part of your writing process, to acknowledge that before you move on?
It is, yes. I wouldn't, it's whenever it comes up. I'm not this prolific author. I'm now beginning, counting with the rewrite of my first book, my fourth book now. So I'm not terribly prolific, but what I have discovered just in my brief history as an author is that there comes a point where you don't write the books, they write you. And that's what I love. It wakes me up in the middle of the night, or it wakes me up first thing in the morning, or I reach where I feel like I'm absolutely painted into a corner, and I'll go for a walk, and then all of a sudden it's like the wall comes down in the corner. And you just see that process over and over again. It's truly thrilling.
Oh, wow, that is fantastic. So it's almost like you're inspired, like the writing is just coming through you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
Fantastic. I was wondering, you know, well, who inspires you, either from the standpoint of, you've already mentioned some writers that you know, inspire you, but either writers or just people out there who are, you know, are in the world of empowerment that have really helped you and inspired you to do all these great things, again, with this fabulous movement?
I would say probably the person that inspired me the most was Earle Nightingale. Earle Nightingale was, they call him the Dean of Motivation. He was a radio announcer and then became a writer. He founded Nightingale Conant Publishing, audio publishing. They were the first company to do audio publishing. And I used to, and still do, listen to him all of the time. He had this mellifluous voice and just an incredible writing style. And he was so committed to the craft of writing. I mean, he constantly worked on his writing. I truly admired him. I love Shakespeare. I think James Allen was a wonderful writer. There are some really good writers out there today. I think that Wayne Dyer is a wonderful writer. I actually think, and her name is not coming to me, but the woman who wrote The Hunger Games, I think she is a wonderful way of telling what many would consider to be a difficult story, but doing it with grace and almost as a musician. It's like a magician, rather. It's like sleight of hand. She gets you to look in one direction and then tells you something so that she imparts the information to you from a completely different angle. There are a number of people, but I would say those are the main ones. And again, he's a friend, but I just find Joe Vitale's work to be excellent and truly groundbreaking. Gay Hendricks is another who is almost, you read his work, he wrote, it's not going to come to me, it's about upper limiting. Anyway, his one of his books, it was not The Big Idea, but something like that. Anyway, one of his books was just phenomenal, and when I first read it, I thought, oh, this is kind of simple, this is kind of basic. But then I realized the beauty and the basic, how basic it is. One other person just came to mind, and to me, he is a master. And Stephen King actually says he writes the greatest dialogue of any artist, of any author ever. And that's Larry McMurtry, who wrote Lonesome Dove. He has a way of writing dialogue that is just so neat and pristine and without hyperbole, but still manages to convey a very powerful message.
Mm. Oh, so beautiful. So tell me, Will, what really inspires you just in general in life? I mean, something must have really inspired you to get this movement going and all the things you've done. Wait, but what in your day-to-day life really just inspires Will?
Well, you know, and I make this point in my first book, and I think, to be very honest, I think what has inspired me is the challenges that I have gone through and wanting to overcome them. I was raised in a family that was well-to-do, but one in which there was a lot of dysfunction and very little love. And I sought to discern my place in the world because I really didn't feel like I had one. I felt like I was not worthy of making an accomplishment. And even though I was fortunate in that I had been given all of the many things that would launch one in that sort of a direction, that from an emotional supportive standpoint, I lacked a lot of that. And so I see a lot of people like that. And I know that there are a lot of people who are going through life leading, as Emerson said, lives of quiet desperation. And I'm seeking to sort of bring that out and shine light on that so that we can be happy in this life and to have a sense of fulfillment and to enjoy what we have. By the way, The Big Leap was the name of the Gay Hendricks book, The Big Leap, great book.
Yeah.
But he talks about in there, I mean, when we have great things happen in our lives. Sometimes it's more difficult to enjoy life when things really are good because there is this part of us that doesn't feel worthy. And so I'm seeking to bring to the world an opportunity to see that each and every one of us is, and that also that each and every one of us has challenges, and that everyone deserves our compassion, and that we are the epicenter of our lives. You know, our minds work in two directions. Our minds send out what we would like. We visualize, we think about, we plan, et cetera. But then the world sends back to us some of the negativity and some of the challenges that we've actually put out. And so it's as if the two meet in the middle and it gets watered down. And so what we have to do is ramp up and amp up what we are putting out in the form of our intention so that we begin to reshape the world. Will Smith is, you asked who inspires me. I think Will Smith is one of the most inspiring people alive. And my intention, I said I was going to give the 6 millionth bracelet to Maya Angelou. I am going to give the 10 millionth bracelet. I have held it out. We're over 10 million bracelets, but I have the 10 millionth, and I'm going to give that to Will Smith because he is a very inspiring and amazing person. There's some great interviews of him on YouTube sharing his philosophy, and a very inspiring person.
Mm.
He says, and I love this line, he says, I bend the universe to my will. And I love that because I think actually everyone is bending the universe to their will. The question is, are they doing it with intention? Have they truly made it an intention of this is what I'm going to do and what life is going to be like for me?
Oh, that is so incredible. And when all that complaining gets in the way, the intention can't be too darn clear, can it?
No. I mean, you can't simultaneously focus on what is wrong and create what you want. It's an impossibility.
Yeah, that's such a really, really powerful and strong observation. And thank you so much for sharing that wisdom with us, because that is, like, I think, really just so, so important. I was wondering, do you have something that you could share with us that you do for yourself or you share with others to do that puts them into the action of this more positive role as opposed to complaining, really living in the dream and seeing the possibilities happen? Is there anything you use as a tool for that?
Well, there are a number of things. Sometimes when I say it, people are like, okay, I'm not ready to drink that Kool-Aid. So I always say, okay, well, don't drink the Kool-Aid, but just open the refrigerator door and look inside. So
I love that.
The first thing I would do, and I have said this and I say this, I go into quite a bit of detail, and my background is broadcasting, just so you know. I was a broadcasting major from the University of South Carolina, and I was in radio for many years. Stop watching the news. Stop watching, stop reading, stop listening to the news. The news is actually bad news. Talk radio is another. I feel that talk radio is there to engage and enrage, and sometimes it's there to enrage and engage. And people say, well, what will you talk about? I never run out of things to talk about. And if something truly important happens, somebody's going to tell you. I was in Tanzania. I actually led a group to Tanzania to help build a hospital there a few years ago, and we all went to give blood one morning, and when we did, the manager of the blood center came running out to tell us Michael Jackson had died. So even around the world, people are going to tell you something important happens or something big happens, but for me, it's shutting off that negativity, you know. It's so funny, especially now if I watch the television, which is so rare. Is your cat trying to kill you? Find out tonight at 11 o'clock. And it's like, okay, this is ridiculous. I don't need to sit here and angst over an hour and a half over my cat, you know. And it's just a way of trying to control. It's a way of trying to instill fear, because fear is one of the two great motivators. You know, fear and desire are the only motivators we have. So, I would say that's a big thing, and yet I think it's absolutely necessary. I think we need to just shut it off and to begin to focus on, listen to, think about. I would much rather be listening to Joe Vitale or Earl Nightingale, Wayne Dyer, et cetera, while I'm driving around, Michael Beckwith, et cetera, than listening to the news or somebody trying to scare me.
Yeah, you know, Will, it's so interesting that you bring that up because we live about 8 months of the year in a small community in Manzanillo, Mexico, and we purposely get no cable for that reason. And we're really completely out of the realm of what's going on in the day-to-day news, and we don't miss it, and our blood pressure goes down 10 to 20 here. And there's literally, if I have stress in any given day, it surprises me. So what you're saying is so true. I've experienced this. We both have for ourselves with our home in Mexico. And when we go back to New Mexico, even though it's a small community, we've got that influx of all of that news and all of that traffic and all of that stuff going on, and it makes an enormous difference in the quality of life. Huge.
Well, it goes back to that five reasons people complain. The news is really complaining, and it's done to get attention. You know, a complaint is focusing on a problem at hand rather than the resolution sought, and that's what news does. That's my definition of a complaint. It's focusing on a problem at hand rather than a resolution sought, and that's what the news does. I have a friend who keeps CNN on 24 hours a day. He sleeps with it at the foot of his bed. And you know that has to be going into his consciousness while he's sleeping. And this person is on anti-stress medication, high blood pressure medication, antidepressant medication, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he says, I just can't understand it. And I tried to explain it to him. He's like, no, I don't think there's a relationship between the two. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that. Thank you so much for sharing that, because that is so incredibly powerful. Is there anything else you do to really strengthen this, you know, accentuate the positive and get away from the complaining mentality for yourself?
Well, one of the things I love about our Facebook page with the Complain Free World is the other, we have 23,000 plus followers, and they post these inspiring things, and then I post back to them, and there's a lot of sharing of that kind of thing. I just also feel that exercise and meditation, I mean, those are two things I do every single day. That I feel the exercise keeps the endorphins up, the meditation keeps me centered. And I just feel, you know, sitting and forcing your mind to be quiet for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever you're able to do. One of the things I like to say is, whose mind is it anyway? You know, it's my mind, but it's constantly being buffeted by winds from people on either side. So I need to develop that capacity for controlling it, and that's what I find that the meditation does. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I don't exercise to stay in shape. I exercise to to stay happy and healthy in my mind.
So beautiful. And, you know, I think, too, leaving that openness for both when you're exercising can happen, as well as meditation, where you're just leaving that openness for new creativity to come in and seep through and, you know, think of more marvelous ways that you can make a change in the world. Like you have with this fantastic complaint-free movement, no question. So, Will, you've done all this over a reasonably short period of time. It's attracted so much attention, and so many people are benefiting from it worldwide. What's next for Will?
Well, I guess I'll go ahead and share. I'm actually writing, I do have, as I said, I've got another book that I'm working on, and this is a book on happiness. I feel that there is so much misinformation and disinformation about happiness that is out there, truly in an intention to try and help people. But I read a dozen or so books on happiness and didn't find that they helped all that much. But then I came to some realizations for myself and began working on them, so I'm doing that. And honestly, believe it or not, I have set a date, and I invite everybody to mark the date, September 21st, 2056. That will be the first day of peace in the world for the rest of humanity. How's that for big?
That's really big.
Well, the way I look at it is you've got all these crazy people that are saying when the world is going to end, why can't I just say, and the one thing we talk about, peace, and you and I both know if we want to lose weight, the first thing we do is pick a weight that we want to weigh. If we want to do something, we pick a date by which we want to do it. We have never said in our culture that this will be the day when, as Chief Joseph said, we will fight no more forever. And so I just said September 21st, 2056. That gives us a couple of generations of people, and all it takes is people believing it. Just like with the complaint-free world thing. If people start believing it, it will be. So I put it out there and leave the rest to the consciousness of people.
Oh, that is so beautiful. And before we let you go, I hate to close our conversation because I've learned so much and it's just been so rich with really excellent wisdom. But where can people contact you for more information about you and about the movement and getting involved? I mean, I know I visited your website and immediately bought the bracelets, and I'm going to share our interview with everyone who comes to our event in September, our book release event in September. I was so excited about it for myself and for everyone I know. So share with us where they can find you.
Well, they can reach, they can learn about the complaint-free world more at acomplaintfreeworld.org, acomplaintfreeworld.org. They can get bracelets, they can get books, they can get information. They can also download a free program to instigate in their church. There's also one for downloading to do in your workplace. So if you want to bring this to your workplace, there is a workbook suggested way of doing it, and it's free. The Complaint-Free World is a nonprofit, so it's all available for you there. For me, as far as my speaking and things like that, they can go to willbowen.com. That's willbowen.com, and they can reach me at will@willbowen.com.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Will. The time has just flown, and thank you for sharing, again, such rich information, and we're making such an amazing difference in our world with this fantastic movement.
Vicki, it's my honor. Thank you.
Okay, and if anyone out there would like to learn more about the opportunities at Expert Insights, including our publishing of books, magazines, radio broadcasts, as well as communities, you can find us at getei.com, that's getei.com, and Will, again, thank you so much. It has just been the richest, most wonderful hour with you.
Thank you very much, Vicki. Take care.